Welcome to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. My name's Dr. Andrew Tresina, a GP by background in Somerset, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Kate Staveley, also a GP from Somerset.
And Kate, today you're kindly going to be the authority as we talk about chronic pain.
Yes, I thought this would be an interesting area to cover. I mean, about a third of the population experience chronic pain, and I think historically we never really acknowledged that there was a difference between acute pain and chronic pain. So I thought it'd be quite interesting if you and I explored it.
That would be really good. So acute pain is a really nasty pain and a chronic pain isn't as nasty. Is that what the difference is?
No. Acute means instant and chronic means long time. But actually, an acute pain is usually caused by some sort of inflammation or damage. So you break your leg, you've got a pain because the bone's broken. You've got tonsillitis. It's painful because your tonsils are inflamed. So there's usually a mechanism that has caused some sort of damage, which has caused your body to send a message to the brain going, this hurts, don't move it because you might make it worse. And that would be an acute pain. And so we have different ways of managing that. Chronic pain.
All right, can we just nail acute pain a little bit more? Can I just share? So you and I learn at medical school, if you've got a fracture, you immobilize it so that it can heal. But I had the experience of being on a boat once and somebody broke their wrist. And the moment we got her ashore, so she just rested, the moment we got her ashore and put a back slab on in the local hospital in Scotland, the immobilization, the pain completely went. Whereas when it was in a sling around her arm, the movement of the boat, or also when she was walking, there was still pain. So that was a very nice illustration.
Yes, so there's a physical mechanism that's causing damage that allows your tissues to send messages up to the brain going, this hurts, stop doing this.
Yep.
And your brain goes, oh, I must rest it and let it get better.
Absolutely.
By itself. And then we've got some quite good mechanisms for managing acute pain. So there's immobilization. You know, if you've broken a bone or sprained or something like that, you stop it moving, it stops hurting. We've got painkillers that work quite well for acute pain. So paracetamol, a fairly generic painkiller, tells your brain to stop worrying about the pain. We've got anti-inflammatories, so things like ibuprofen, that get rid of the inflammation that is causing the pain. So they work quite effectively as painkillers. And then you've got the stronger painkillers, the opiate-based painkillers like codeine or heroin or opiates, diamorphine and things like that. And they work by telling your brain that it doesn't matter anymore, roughly.
And thinking about around the world over thousands of years, acupuncture and acupressure has been used. And I do remember there's an acupressure point which shouldn't be used in pregnancy, but it's between the thumb and the forefinger on the muscly bit there. It's called large intestine 4. And I have seen acute tonsillitis remaining red with pus on, but the pain being abolished by just massaging this point.
That's interfering with the nervous message to your brain, isn't it? It's interfering with the electrical message that your brain's getting that says something's wrong. And the way acupuncture works very, very broadly, I mean, you know, people will give you much better information, but it interferes with those nervous messages. And so acute pain is relatively straightforward to manage.
Yep.
But sometimes people go on and they have pain for more than 12 weeks. And that's the definition of chronic pain is to have had the pain for more than 12 weeks. And then it becomes a lot harder to manage because quite often the damage it's no longer inflamed. It's no longer broken and moving if you're thinking about your broken wrist. Something else is happening to make that pain persist.
I was going to ask that. So the mechanism, what is the mechanism of this persistence of pain that's happening? Because many of us think pain means damage and therefore we should rest it, for instance.
Yeah, and I think we don't really know. There may be more recent research. I haven't read up about this recently. But the bottom line is we don't really understand what makes pain become chronic. Why is it that one person can have shingles, which is very, very painful because the nerve is inflamed and you have to manage it. But then a lot of people, once the nerve's no longer inflamed, the pain's gone away. But a lot of people, other people, carry on having pain. Why? Why does one person get pain and not somebody else?
Yes, you're talking about post-herpetic neuralgia there.
That's right. Yes. And there are others. Back pain is a very common problem that becomes chronic, in that quite often people will want an explanation for why they've got a pain, and they'll end up going to see the doctor very often, and they'll have x-rays and scans and see specialists and physiotherapists, and nothing really seems to resolve their pain. And they'll keep being told by specialists, oh, there's nothing there, or it's a bit of wear and tear, a bit of arthritis, nothing really to explain why you've still got pain. And so we have to manage that sort of pain in a very different way to acute pain.
Thank you. How do we manage that pain? Because classically for an acute pain, we mentioned briefly acupuncture, but essentially it's often a pill or it's a medicine. Are medicines appropriate? And are they the only answer for a chronic pain as well?
I don't think they're the only answer. They're the most commonly used answer, but they're also incredibly ineffective. So I think for chronic pain, there's various quotes, but they say never expect more than 60% of the pain to be managed by tablets. So I think for people with chronic pain, we've just got to be realistic about how much treatment is going to get rid of the pain for you and how much we need to look at other things that can help you to manage the pain. Now, the painkillers will be the same as we went through for acute pain. So, yeah, paracetamol, it's a good general painkiller. Does a lot of heavy lifting for pain. Yeah. The anti-inflammatories are only effective if you've got inflammation. So quite often people, when they've got acute arthritis, they'll be taking anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen, diclofenac, naproxen. And they'll be good for the arthritis when it's flared up, when it's inflamed. But then when the pain becomes chronic, they don't actually do very much because there's no inflammation there to manage. So they have limitations. And then all the opiate-based painkillers, so the codeine, coproximol, cocodamol, and then the strong ones, tramadol, fentanyl, diamorphine, they have very limited use because they work on the brain to tell your brain to ignore the pain, as it were, but the brain gets used to them. And so you end up with this sort of cycle of becoming addicted to painkillers. And you see this a lot with people with chronic pain, that they have to take stronger and stronger painkillers to try and manage their pain, but it's still not managing their pain.
Right. So pills have some use, but there's something about what we can do for ourselves. So there's skills as well as pills. How are you gonna sell this to me that I've got chronic pain, doctor, and I want you to give me a tablet to make it better, thank you?
And that is incredibly difficult because I think most of us would like to go and see the doctor and get a solution to our problem and not have to think about it and get on with our very busy lives.
Yep.
And much as we'd like that to happen, that's not how it works. And we get a lot of people who end up with a chronic pain looking for answers in all sorts of different places. And some people will find those answers in those different places. Some people will find answers at the osteopath, chiropractor, acupuncture, the herbal remedies, homeopathy, Reiki. You know, there's all sorts of possibilities. But no one remedy will fit everybody.
So what can I do myself if I'm prepared to take back the locus of control? If I say to you, doctor, okay, I accept what you say. I've tried various things, but what would you advise me that I can do to help me and my pain? Would you advise relaxation? Would you advise Pilates? Would you advise yoga? Would you advise going for walks? What am I going to do?
So I think activity is the first sort of branch of what you should be looking at. And I think when I say activity, I deliberately didn't say exercise there, because exercise is an activity, but there's lots of other things you do to move your body that you may not think of as exercise, but which is really good for you. And I think quite often when we say to people, oh, you should exercise more, it's very off-putting, isn't it? If you've got terrible back pain and you go and see someone and you say, I want a solution to my back pain, they say, well, exercise more.
Yeah.
You're not going to go away and join an exercise. I mean, you may do, some people do, but it would be rather off-putting and you'd feel that you'd been let down and that you haven't found a solution to your problem. So I think for most people, they need to find the balance between movement that is beneficial, but not doing so much movement that they're making things worse. And we usually call this pacing. It's finding what suits your body. So if you find walking 100 meters comfortable, but walking 500 meters makes your pain worse, well, then walk 100 meters consistently and then maybe add in something else to it. If you like music, go to dance. But don't do all the very energetic dances. Enjoy the simpler movement. It's about compromise, really, isn't it? And finding the movement, the activities that you can do without making your pain worse, but that you can enjoy your life.
That's very helpful, because so often the word exercise itself, the word feels threatening, and for some of us it conjures up visions of lycra and very fit people and not quite what I do, and therefore I'm a bit frightened even to try.
Yes, yeah, I agree. And I think, yeah, historically, whenever anyone said exercise, I think, oh, I must go to the gym and sweat for half an hour, or I need to join the local tennis club and play tennis or something like that, or go swimming or play rugby or whatever it happens to be. But actually, exercise is about walking around your garden once an hour. It's about getting down on the floor and playing with your grandchildren. It's doing movements that you might not otherwise be doing.
Doing any movements, moving muscles, because that's what they're designed to do. And activity keeps us younger longer. Slight divergence off topic, but I was reading a book the other day about the benefits of activity for older age. And it's more important that we stay fit in our 60s and 70s than it is, in some ways, to be fit in our 20s and 30s, because the benefits of being fit in our 70s are that in our 80s, we can tie up our own shoelaces and get to the toilet in time.
Yes.
Whereas if we're not fit enough...
Yeah, and isn't it your big fear that you're going to have a fall when you get to a certain age, and instead of just falling over, somebody describes you as having had a fall. And you can make that much less likely if you keep yourself, keep your balance going and keep yourself active in little ways, not big exercise bouts necessarily.
Thank you. So going back to chronic pain, I gather you were giving a talk on it recently. What were the sort of questions that you were being asked?
This is quite interesting. So there's a lot of peer support groups around chronic pain. So peer support is where people who've got lived experience of what you've got, so a load of people with chronic pain, get together and they share with each other their tips and how they can manage their pain and what's worked for them and what hasn't, and they support each other, and it's a very affirming environment.
Yes.
And I was invited as a GP just to go and chat, because they wanted to know essentially why GPs can't fix chronic pain. And why is it so difficult to get an appointment to see a GP? And why is it when they see the GP doesn't come up with an answer to their problem? And I thought that was quite interesting, because, as a GP, and I expect you find the same, managing pain is one of the hardest things we have to do.
Yes.
Somebody comes in with a pain that's not going away, and you've given various bits of advice and you've tried various prescriptions. It's really hard to manage then, isn't it?
It is. The papers are always full of the latest advance in so-and-so, and we've had many marvellous medicines over the years and surgical techniques, and so it sort of almost becomes an expectation that we will get it. We will get it right. We will be able to cure any problem that comes our way, but actually human bodies and human beings aren't quite as simple as that.
No, they aren't. And we all, going back to your exercise comment about the importance of exercise in your 60s, they've now shown that from 60 onwards is when you lose strength much faster than any point in your life, and that's why it's really important to keep yourself active in your 60s.
Interesting. coming back to the chronic pain, what other questions came up, or rather, how did you field those? How did you answer the questions that were there? How do we help?
So I think the gist of the meeting was about people taking control of their own lives.
Right.
And you can't expect somebody else to fix it. If you've got chronic pain, nobody else is going to be able to fix you. There are things that people can suggest that may help and will treat it. And that's not to say if you've got chronic pain, you've got it forever. It may resolve and settle down and, you know, it waxes and wanes. But nobody else can fix it for you. You need to do some work on helping yourself take control over what's happening. So, as we said earlier on, you know, exercise, do what exercise makes you feel good, but don't do too much because that'll make it worse. Choose a lifestyle that you find comfortable and find joy in life where you can, rather than constantly, and it's just so easy to say, isn't it, constantly feeling sorry for yourself because you're in pain. And I know that being in pain is miserable and makes people feel miserable. So that's not, it sounds a you know, just a general answer, and it's not meant like that. But we only have one life. We've got to make the most of what we've got. And if we've got chronic pain, it makes it a lot harder. But we just have to get on with it, really.
And it's very wearing and tiring, isn't it?
Oh, exhausting. A lot of people, yes, with chronic pain do suffer with sleep problems, are generally exhausted, constantly trying to push themselves to do more. So anything that people can do to help those parts of their life are going to help as well.
It's really interesting, this. I mean, a slightly allied topic is medically unexplained symptoms, which is when there is a symptom going on, but there is not a physical explanation for it. And one of the questions that sometimes helps some people. So for everybody listening, this is not going to work for everybody, or by maybe only for a few, but is for us to ask ourselves, what does this symptom mean to me? What's it trying to tell me? Has it got a message? If I can share an anecdote, I remember seeing a chap many years ago, probably about early 40s. And he came in saying, I'm getting dreadful headaches. So I took stories and took a history, took his blood pressure. And I took a bit more history, and he said, it feels like I'm banging my head against a brick wall at work. Anyway, I gave some advice about blood pressure and caffeine and other things. I might have tempted him into taking a fluorescence for where am I going in life. But anyway, that's by the way. And he came back about 6 weeks later for something different, because he wasn't coming back for a follow-up for that. And I said, oh, by the way, how are your headaches? He said, oh, they've gone, thanks very much. I said, did that fluorescence help? Oh, no, that didn't help at all, no. But I've changed my job.
Interesting.
So there he was. And it was he that said to me, it feels like I'm banging my head against a brick wall at work, changed his job. And
the pain went away.
And coincidentally, I can't say that correlation is causation. I can't say it's cause and effect, but he was happy.
I think our brains have an interesting way of telling us what we should be doing, haven't they? Yeah, and pain is one of the strongest messages our brain can give us.
Yes.
About things.
Yes, yes. Is it always easy to diagnose an acute pain?
I mean, it's easier to diagnose an acute pain than it is a chronic pain.
Mm.
And there are very well-known causes of acute pain that we can easily diagnose.
Yep.
But sometimes people can have what would appear to be an acute pain that is much harder to diagnose. And that then may go on to become a chronic pain, and you're never quite sure what's causing it.
Would you like to give me an example of that? What sort of thing are you thinking of there?
Back pain is a really good one, isn't it? You can have a sudden onset of back pain,
yep.
And people can have pulled a muscle in their back or slipped a disc. Yes. And that's fairly straightforward, easy to diagnose, relatively easy to diagnose, simple painkillers. Sometimes that pain turns out not to be related to a disc or a pulled muscle, and it just carries on. And then it becomes much harder to diagnose. And then people may end up having lots of investigations, so scans and x-rays and things like that. And they might find a bit, as I said earlier on, might find a bit of arthritis here or something there.
Yes.
And historically, as doctors, we've been very keen to make a diagnosis, haven't we?
Yes.
And quite often we'll find something, when we've got a new way of investigating, we'll find something on the investigation that we want to explain, and we'll say that's what's causing the pain, for instance. You think of the incidentalomas on x-rays. Do you,
yes.
For those, yeah. So if, yes. When this, so for the benefit of our listeners, when you have an x-ray, sometimes you find something on the x-ray you're not expecting. It probably doesn't matter. It's just there. And we call them incidentalomas. But sometimes people will look at them and will think that they are relevant or of significance, or yes. As our knowledge and research increases with time, we'll find they are relevant. Or so I'm not really sure where I'm going with this, but yeah, sometimes it is hard to diagnose the cause of the pain.
I'd like to change the topic very slightly, and I suspect we've been really, I suspect the people who came to your talk were mainly adults, but can we switch to children? And can we switch to acute pain rather than chronic pain? Because I've got absolutely no knowledge about chronic pain in children at all. But why is it, or how is it, that a mother's soothing can make a difference? How's that? What's happening
there?
Well,
I think there's a big there's a big role in pain in general played by the autonomic nervous system.
Right.
So that's our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, which controls our body in general. The sympathetic nervous system being the one that tells us that we should be worried about something, the flight or flight or fright, or fawn and freeze mechanism. And I think that makes you more, if that is triggered, the sympathetic nervous system, you're more likely to experience a sensation as being a pain. Now, if you calm down the sympathetic nervous system, so classic one is mothers cooing and cuddling and soothing, making soothing noises, that stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which calms the sympathetic nervous system down and tells your body, no, you're absolutely fine. You're not about to be eaten by a tiger. You know, the world is safe. And then the pain calms down as well.
Interesting. How fascinating. And of course, mothers, I say mothers, but you know, archetypally it may well be mother, but any mother figure or anyone soothing you, gently rubbing it to make it better, or stroking an area, does seem to have effect. I don't know quite what's going on there, but I have a speculative anecdote. I remember seeing a girl, I don't know, about 8 or 10, in casualty once, and she'd been hit by a ball, I think, on a long bone on her leg. And so, you know, the question was, do we x-ray or not? And there are some groups of children that seem to feel pain so strongly that you virtually always x-ray them and you virtually never find anything. And on that occasion, somebody had been telling me about various things. And I just did a little bit of holding. I smoothed over the area without touching it. I held either side. And using the acupressure homunculus on the ear, found the point on the ear that was very sore, rubbed it gently with my lucky matchstick, and we didn't need to x-ray her because the pain had gone.
But isn't it interesting? I mean, you say some children feel pain more than others. How do we learn what pain is as a child?
What a good question.
How do you learn how significant? I know of a little girl she's maybe about 8, who really struggles with interoceptions, understanding what your body's doing. And every time this little girl has anything even slightly wrong with her, she's convinced that it's something terrible. And you know, so if she's got a sore throat, she's convinced her head's going to drop off. If she's if she's bumped her hand, she's convinced she's broken a bone.
Yes.
And for her, it's very hard to learn the different. And the other day, she actually hurt herself quite significantly. She wasn't that bothered about it.
Oh, how interesting.
So I think there's so much more to actually understanding our bodies and interoception and how we feel things. Yes.
And feeding into that is our confidence level, because if we're feeling confident about something, let's say a wasp sting is of no consequence. Whereas if we're feeling highly sensitive and vulnerable, then a wasp sting could be throw us.
Yes. Throw you right off. And of course, at school, at schools, they always use the wet tissue, don't they? So if any child who's fallen over and hurt themselves, they go and get a wet towel, you know, those green hand towels, make them wet and put it on the offending bit. And instantly, most children are better. You know, get a wet towel, had a wet towel put on it, stops hurting now straight away. And if it doesn't feel better, then the teachers know, well, maybe there's something a bit more going on here. We need to look into it a bit more. Because children do, they respond very dramatically, don't they, to things happening to them.
They do. Kate, we've talked about chronic pain. We've talked a bit about acute pain. We've talked about pain in children. And I'm not competent or qualified to talk about chronic pain in children. So we've skipped aside from that. Are there any last key points that you'd like to help us on this topic, which where skills may be as important as pills?
No, I mean, I think my key take home is that pills aren't going to fix everything. As a society, we have spent many decades thinking pills are incredibly important. And certainly in Western medicine, we're very interested in medication and prescriptions and pills and things like that. I think we overestimate what medication does, and we underestimate the power of the body to heal itself and fix itself and sort itself out.
That's a very... very astute comment, and it makes me think of giving antibiotics. I would always say to patients, the antibiotic will not make you better. It kills bacteria. It is your immune system and your body's health self-healing powers that will make you better.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, and hundreds of years ago, when they didn't have antibiotics and didn't have all this medication, people survived. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here now. So,
no, our ancestors survived.
They did, didn't they? I mean, maybe not to... The great lengths that we now survive, but they did survive.
Interestingly, I think a couple of hundred years ago, if you made it past childhood, you probably may well have survived as long and as healthily as many people do now, or more healthily, unless you had an accident which took you away.
Interesting thought.
Kate, thank you very much indeed for helping us explore pain, both chronic and acute, and a very interesting conversation. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, Andrew.
Go well, everybody.